I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. With the movie industry facing a number of challenges like digital streaming, changing moviegoer habits, and lingering effects of the pandemic, theater owners and Hollywood execs are betting big on summer hits like Superman, I Know What You Did Last Summer, The Fantastic Four, and maybe the one I'm looking forward to most, F1, the movie.
Some people look at Sonny Hayes. They see a guy who lives in a van, a gambling junkie who missed his shot. The best that never was. But I see possibility.
The Brad Pitt movies made more than $500 million globally since it opened in late June. But overall, it has not been easy getting people out to cinemas these days. And the task is an even greater one for independent theaters. So as the summer slowly begins to wind down, what better time to share what some of our local indie theaters are playing right now? We got a great panel of movie buffs and critics lined up for you who will do just that. And of course, we'll gush about the blockbusters too. At the table was Michael Phillips, film critic for the Chicago Tribune, Rebecca Fons, who's director of programming at the Gene Siskel Film Center, and Jeremy Martyr, who's programmer and manager at the Music Box Theater. And I began by asking the panel their favorite movies for the summer. Here's Rebecca.
I like the big loud ones too.
The big loud ones.
Yes. You know, Brad Pitt is easy on the eyes. But I really like the film I'm Sorry, Baby, Eva Victor film.
Tell us more.
Yeah, it's small, relatively small, about a young woman who's going through a post-trauma and kind of figuring out what she's going to do next in her life, living in a house on a Massachusetts college campus and kind of experiencing a huge life change. And it's Eva Victor directed, wrote it, and stars in it. I think it's streaming now, but still in theaters also in Chicago. And it's sort of a balance to the loud, fast cars of there's no Superman, no one flies.
No one flies,
but she grows, you know, so it's a good one. I like
that. Okay, so what, Sorry Baby?
Sorry Baby, yeah.
Sorry Baby.
Yeah.
Jeremy, what comes to mind for you?
For me, the film of my summer was The Phoenician Scheme. We, you know, at the Music Box, I also love big movies. I love going to the theaters. 28 Years Later comes to mind for a movie that really connected with me.
Mm-hmm.
But I like Phoenician Scheme. I think I had the emotional reaction a lot of my friends and cohort did not respond to in that movie. But the father-daughter stuff is something that I really connected to. So for the Phoenician Scheme for me.
Mm, nice. Michael.
You know, some of the big, loud popcorn movies, which who doesn't look forward to them even now? You know, I mean, you know, pretty good this summer. Not great. You know, Superman, pretty good.
Yeah.
F1.
I heard it
good.
Was. I heard it was kind of a mess.
Yeah. Well. And yeah, there are some this summer. They're kind of interestingly divisive, I think. But yes. I got to say, all summer, I kind of was hoping for something on the originality order of Sinners, which came out in April. But hung in there.
Yeah.
And repeat viewings for a lot of people.
It was great to me. I saw that and I hadn't in a very long time seen a movie that made me want to like dumpster dive into the World Wide Web as much as that movie did. I was going down every possible rabbit hole I could, just like learning more about the South and Asians in the South and just like what that connection was. And Michael B. Jordan.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ryan Coogler,
ladies and gentlemen.
And we were even thinking, we had to remember when it was released because we were like, was that in
it
June?
It was April.
And because it hung on, as Michael said, it hung on for so long, it really felt like it was a summer film. And I think that's sort of like when we who work in film, we love when a film can do that and really hang on, bring people into the theaters like on its third, fourth, fifth, sixth week because it's word of mouth.
And it's coming back. For the Music Box's 70mm festival. Yes. It was 70, and that's the first time.
Yeah, he called it a love letter to the theatrical experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's been pounding the pavement, preaching about 70mm and how important of a format it is. And it is going to be coming back to the Music Box for our 70mm festival.
For the people who, it's just going right over their heads, Jeremy. Bring us back in. What is 70mm?
70mm is double the size of 35mm, which is our regular format on film.
Okay.
And the way that I like to describe it and the way that it's been described to me by projectionists is on digital, you can see that the pants of the person in the background is brown. And on 70mm, you can see that they're corduroy. So there's more resolution, deeper feel, textures, more contrast. And Ryan Coogler decided to shoot this on an ultra-wide Panavision, which hasn't been used since Hateful Eight. So he's bringing this back. He's explaining the importance of formats to be intentional with when you're going to go see things. And it's going to be playing next week, starting at the Music
That's
Box.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's basically super wide and super detailed. And that, if that doesn't sound pretty good to you, then...
I'm sold.
Then let's,
I am sold.
Time to learn why.
Let's just touch back on the hot mess that I called Superman a second ago, Michael, because some are saying it's a commentary about ICE crackdowns.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
You know, yeah, you can read into that if you like.
And how are they making that connection?
Well, this is not going to be a politically sophisticated argument, but I mean, in a way, you can. Some of the right-wing commentators have said that it's basically Superman is saving Gaza from Israel in this particular scenario.
Okay.
And there are parallels, more clearly, I guess, parallels with some of the action. Adversaries in this thing to the ICE pick, sort of these miserable ICE raids we're seeing all over the country. That maybe not. I think I got my own problems with the movie that don't really relate to that, but I actually think a lot of it is pretty good and messy. Yes.
Yes. F1. As we opened up talking about when I think about the fact that this is okay, Brad Pitt, right? Kind of like the old timer getting back in the game. He's in his 60s now, but you got scenes of him shirtless in ice bath. I think of Tom Cruise flying fast, Top Gun, Brad Pitt driving fast in a car. What do we think about that? Are these older actors maybe trying to prove I still got it?
Well, I think everything old is new again, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's
40's
a line.
The new 30.
That's right. Go that's good. My motto. That's great. Oh, this is good. Well, there's even a line in F1 where one of the commentators on the side of the track says like the 90s called. They want and it's like the 90s called. They want their race car driver back or whatever.
Oh,
and it's like
boy.
The 90s called. They want their movies back. And there's a moment when Brad Pitt appears kind of at the end to be the hero, and there's this wide shot of him like walking on the race. Track and it's like he might as well be on like a white horse coming to save the day. I grew up with these guys as the heroes, when they were in their 30s and 40s. And I mean, I think if the movie's good, it doesn't really matter what age the hero is. In Sinners, we have Michael B. Jordan, who's a younger great hero, and he's as captivating as Tom Cruise is, hanging off the side of a plane or in an underwater submarine scene. I think audiences respond to it. And F1, as you said, has made $500 million. Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning did not perform as well. So I think critics have said, the film just didn't kind of stand up to the previous films in the franchise. So I think it just, it depends on the film. It depends on sort of audiences' interest in the story. So, Naked Gun, Liam Neeson is 73 and it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So, I think it's age is truly just a number.
Well, I hear you love that one, especially just the nostalgia piece of it, right?
Yes.
Bringing
I grew
you
up
back.
Watching the original. So then the jokes are very silly and very stupid and it's fun to laugh. So
it's great.
The AC was pumping.
The it's nonstop jokes, gags, visual humor, and the chemistry between Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson. It's quite a funny.
I've just been seeing all the red carpet stuff where people are like, "What is going on there?"
Yes, well, they actually fell in love. So there's like this also real life love story.
Yeah.
And I think everybody needs some good news and some laughs. So
it's
you're
wonderful.
Getting it on screen and in real life, and it's sort of like. It's a win-win. It's great.
We were talking about that in the green room. I think the one thing that's holding the country together right now is like the mass love for this real-life romance.
What, Liam Neeson and Pam Anderson?
Yeah, that's right.
Uniting
thing.
Us as a nation. Past Lives. This was Celine Song's beloved Oscar-nominated film. It was about a woman who reconnects with a childhood flame, and she's got to consider what could have been if her family hadn't left Korea. Her much-anticipated film, Materialists, though, that's been sparking sort of a whole lot of controversy online. Michael, can you fill us in?
Yeah, I love Past Lives, and that
it
film,
did great.
In a really tough moment in the pandemic, people turned out for that one. I mean, the word of mouth was that strong. Materialists did not have the same luck. It's not as good a film, I think.
It's that simple.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's not. it's not like every other thing you saw this summer. In fact, it's nothing like anything you saw this summer. But whether or not it works and whether or not Dakota Johnson was really the right person to anchor it, I don't know. Anybody who made that good a first film that you mentioned, Past Lives, deserves a disappointing second film. And then we'll see what happens next time.
Right. Jeremy, let's go back to the 70 millimeter festival that's starting on Friday at Music Box. So 2001 and Lawrence of Arabia, they're very long movies with great music. Why do people always say that you need to see it in the theaters?
Absolutely. I think 70 millimeter is the format of spectacle.
Yeah.
And those are two of the great spectacle films. And the work that is being done, 70 millimeter is a labor-intensive format.
Yeah.
There are big reels being lifted by the projectionists, and we have some of the best projectionists in the city of Chicago, all around at our theaters. And the ones who can, you know, run it on 70 millimeter, there's going to be, this has been programmed by, you know, Julian Antos and Rebecca Lyon. They're actually putting up the 70 millimeter screen. It's a different screen built in front of the screen.
Oh, super cool. Huge.
That's
super
great.
Huge.
That's awesome.
And they're going to be playing incredible films. You know, we're also going to have like Cleopatra, Sleeping Beauty, and Backdraft, a Chicago classic.
A little something for everyone.
Exactly right. And then as well as Sinners.
Yeah. It's going to be hot this weekend, Rebecca. And
yes.
I know that you've got the Scorchers series running at the Siskel.
We do. We have films, 10 films where heat plays a main character. And so we're playing sweaty, sweaty films. So we've got Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. We have Stanley Kramer's Inherit the Wind, which if you've never seen, it could be a 2025 film. It is incredibly prescient. It's great. It's just one of my favorite films. Bridge on the River Kwai in 4K. David Lean's film, who also directed Lawrence of Arabia. It's our AC works.
Okay, good.
Everybody on the screen is very hot, and in the seats you can be very nice and cool with a crisp glass of wine at the Film Center.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're just having fun with the season, and it was a really, really fun program to
put
together.
Well, I love that you mentioned Spike Lee's 1989 film Do the Right Thing, and I love that that's part of this series. Mm-hmm. Let's get a refresher.
This is the mayor talking.
All right.
Doctor.
Come on, what?
Always do the right thing.
That's it?
That's it.
I got it. I'm gone.
What role would you say hot temperatures play in that particular film?
Oh, I mean, the very first line is Samuel L. Jackson talking about how hot it is on the radio, you know? And I think the heat of the street adds to the heat of the tension in the neighborhood, in the arguments. I mean, we even see that now. I mean, like, you know, my husband and I, our arguments are heightened when we're hot, you know? So I think, you know, everybody is on high alert. And what happens in the film, which is devastating, is even more devastating because it's this sizzling day in Bed-Stuy. So I think you see that the moment the film starts. And if you haven't seen the film, it's one of those canonical American films that everybody's got to see.
This sounds like a cool series. You've got movies by Akira Kurosawa also showing just across the city this week. Remind us, who was he?
Well, Kurosawa was a great Japanese filmmaker. He invented sort of the samurai genre, which had such a huge and drew a lot from the American Westerns. Sent all these great international Japanese films all around the world when people were discovering foreign film.
Did he really influence Star Wars?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. And he did a lot of Shakespeare on film. Some of the best Shakespeare's on film. He also was a great kind of like borrower and also influence on something like Spike Lee, right?
Sure.
I mean, like Spike Lee's got a film coming out with Denzel Washington in a couple of weeks, Highest to Lowest, and that's based on Kurosawa's High and Low, which is a film about this ransom and kidnapping gone horribly wrong, and that's, you know, and that actually was based on an American crime novel. So,
Wow. So
Kurosawa was very into the Western influences, and then he sort of fed the West by, you know, his Seven Samurai film. You know, it ends up inspiring all the spaghetti
Very
westerns
cool.
with Eastwood.
And that one that you mentioned, that High and Low, that's showing at the Siskel later this month.
Yes, in the end of August, yeah.
And Jeremy, you're playing just a whole bunch.
Yeah, we're doing
Kurosawa.
It's called Something Like a Retrospective. We're playing a lot of his films. And he's a great depictor of weather, of big crowds, of large battle scenes, which are all great to watch on the big screen.
Yes, and all before special effects were a thing.
Yeah.
So it's... Yes, and we're doing one Kurosawa at the Film Center, A Stray Dog, as part of our Scorcher series. The film literally begins with a panting dog, and it's a very, very sweaty story of a young police officer whose gun gets stolen, and he's searching high and low for the gun.
High and low.
Yeah, it's a really, really great film, and it'll complement the retrospective at the Music Box.
Well, I am looking at you, Rebecca, with a sad face right now, and you know why.
I do.
Because?
I am leaving the Film Center, I'm leaving Chicago.
You are leaving the city.
Yes.
End of an era at the Siskel.
Yes.
Tell us about the new gig.
Yes, I am heading over to London to be the head of cinema at the Barbican Center.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, thank you so much. Yes.
Are you excited?
I am excited. I have a lot of packing to do. I head over in September. My husband, Jack Newell, and I head over. But the Barbican is this amazing, amazing place in London. It is 43 years old, the same age as I am, which is nice. It hosts the London Symphony Orchestra, the Royal Shakespeare Theater, and it has a cinema, three screens. So it's a little bit like Lincoln Center in New York. It's
nice.
This enormous arts center, internationally recognized, and I will be working across disciplines with my fellow arts leaders and programming a lot of film just like at the Film Center, which is wonderful.
That sounds super exciting. I'm just thinking of, you know, this little girl from Iowa.
I know. My hometown
of
5,000 people. I know.
To London, England.
I know.
So programming will be different.
It'll be different, yeah, but you know, like I said, it's the programming is really similar. I think, you know, what I've been telling people is the programming is a little bit more mainstream and also a little bit more deep cuts. So it's like the center base is like my comfort zone. I know it because it's very similar to the Film Center, but we'll have, you know, Phoenician Scheme and then also things that we show at the Film Center that are much more experimental, like a little bit more, even more deeper. We lean into the experimental even a little bit more at the Barbican.
Yeah. Jeremy and Michael, what is Chicago losing here?
A lot. I mean, just a lot. It's, you know, you took the Film Center job at, you know, in January 2021 when nothing looked like it was going to survive.
Yeah, it was all virtual all the time back then, right?
You know, and it's the one thing that the Film Center had in common with the Music Box, just doggedly figuring out how do we get through this period and still give people as much as they can get online and then slowly sneaking in when it's safe. You know, to bring them back, and the audiences came back because the programming was so good. And it wasn't just because people were interested in going to movies in general, it was because they really liked the programming and still do.
Yeah.
You know, at both places specifically. And I'll tell you, when people come in to Chicago from anywhere else in this country, including New York, they look at what we have and they think they did something right during the toughest years we've known.
And I will say, Rebecca is a supporter of Chicago filmmakers beyond just the Siskel, served on many juries, helped high schoolers. I'm a high school teacher.
Yeah, okay.
Helped students of mine at Cariño Film Festival.
Oh, wonderful.
And just, we're not losing anything because you're still around and you'll be available from London across the pond. But we are eternally grateful for what you brought to the city. So just thank
you. Gosh, thank you so much. Thank you.
I mean, in person, you know, unpleasant woman. But other than that, a lot of skill.
Notoriously cruel I am.
Before we go, tell us what else we can, you know, look forward to at independent theaters this summer. Jeremy?
Yeah, there's so much coming out. The Music Box is going to have a restoration of Taxi Cum my God. Zoom Klo. That's a German word. Yes. It got me. We're doing Son of the White Mare this Saturday. It's an animated film. The Food and Film series is coming back. We're doing Waitress, which is a great film. There's so much to look forward to for the
food.
Rest of the summer.
Yeah. Just stop. Yeah.
Well, this weekend, actually, we opened the Jeff Buckley doc. It's Never Over, Jeff Buckley. So doc fans and Jeff Buckley fans should come out for that. And in September, my last retro series, Cinema of Resistance, starts. Mm. So Malcolm X, Spartacus, Star Wars, Born in Flames. So that starts. And then also we head into fall, which is prestige season, Oscar season, film festival season. Black Harvest will be in November, and the Chicago International Film Festival is in October.
And so that's when we'll have Michael back.
Yes, exactly.
Walk us through all of that.
Yeah, so we head into cooler seasons and like really, really great movie times.
Well,
so lots of good stuff coming.
Best of luck to you. What do you say to the Brits? Cheerio.
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 Tut, tut. Yeah.
Rebecca Fons, Director of Programming at the Gene Siskel Film Center. Michael Phillips, who's film critic for the Chicago Tribune. And Jeremy Martyr, who's programmer and manager at the Music Box Theater. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
The This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Aryan Kumar, mixed by Linnea Dominic, and edited by Dan Tucker. We dive deep into pop culture, so consider subscribing so that you don't miss an episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.